On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We are. I don't want to jinx anything, but I can't remember the last time we were here in D.C. at the headquarters of the 8 campaign on Capitol Hill and actually had five unkinky shows. Well, this is that week. And I think, well, now that we're going to be moving out of this place here pretty soon, we finally got it worked out down to a science. Isn't that nice? Oh, well, at least we did. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. What we do here at the end of the week is a little something we call Friday on the front porch, a little bit of neighborly cussing and discussing over the back fence or actually up on the front porch. Come on up. Knock the dirt and dust off your boots. Kick your feet up on the rail. Grab a swig of whatever it is you want to grab a swig of. Maybe something out of that crockery jug over there with the corn cob stopper. Or maybe just a cool little old glass of sweet iced tea, lemonade available as well, and cool, unpolluted spring water. See, we can have cool, unpolluted spring water because this is an imaginary front porch. See how it works? Yeah. This is a big deal. Thank you very much. Just got notification that Henry has taken care of... Well, let's put it this way. We've only got, and thanks to a previous contribution earlier in the day, we've only got $60 to go in fundraising this evening. And we'll be done for the evening, and I'll be able to shut up about it, which there's so many other things I'd rather talk about. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, though, is our home, and that is where you will find, the entrance to the chat room. Folks wandering by the chat room now, I'm sure we'll have more later. Good evening, Jan. Good evening, Sergi. Good evening, Sparky. It being Friday, people, you know, the front porch is an informal place. No, you know, it's not like we hold the gates closed and then open them up and everybody rushes in. No, it doesn't work that way at all. We're just finishing up the dinner hour here. It's a fairly Spartan existence when we come here. I mean, it's a wonderful town, but kind of Spartan. And that's okay, because the nice thing is that we know how to do good with Spartan. Ferg just made me dinner. The young man is becoming quite adept at such things. This is a sandwich that would probably cost $15 out somewhere. Good French bread. Nice and chewy, a little bit toasted, some freshly sliced tomato, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of mayo, some olive relish, some artichoke heart, marinated. What are you doing?
I'm telling them what I made. It was my sandwich. It was my creation. It was my masterpiece. I get to tell them how it was made.
go on.
Salami, ham, chicken. Tomato, avocado, Havarti cheese, French bread, mayo, muffaletta, artichoke. That's about it, I think.
And it's delightful. So, you know, that's dinner. And we'll probably have something similar for lunch and dinner tomorrow. We've soaked beans here. We've had beans and rice while we've been here. Because beans and rice is good. I'll try not to let it slow me down too. I generally try not to eat right before airtime because it makes me a little bit slow. But this is just perfect. So hopefully y'all, well, depending on where you are, have had breakfast, lunch, dinner, something, and we'll be engaging in front porch conversation this evening. A program announcement. I asked if there was interest. I asked last night at the beginning of the program if there was interest in a Monday program, Monday being Memorial Day. My God, I saw a local news aerial shot of the highway as people tried to get out of this town today. It looks apocalyptic. There's no amount of money that anybody could pay me to get out on that highway right now. It was road warrior. So there'll be a lot of doings here because Memorial Day is kind of a big deal. I've been seeing and hearing, oh Lord, Harleys running up and down the roads all day long because the ride to the wall is annually this time, unless this time every year, this time annually. The Vietnam War Memorial. Maybe during, because part of our plans for the weekend is nothing elaborate. We love to go down onto the mall on sunny days and just walk and wander in and out of museums. I like the National Museum of Art. Ferg loves the Air and Space Museum. I'd like to take a little time to do the Museum of the American Indian this time through. But we'll wander along. Maybe we'll make it all the way down to the far end of the mall and pay our respects to the at the Vietnam War Memorial. That would be appropriate. And, of course, this is the, if I got this right, yeah, the 23rd day of May. And it would have been the 100, it would be the 120th birthday. The 120th birthday of my grandfather, Frederick Ferdinand. Would be 120 years old today. And you know what? That's one of those things that just sort of from an aesthetic standpoint, I kind of resent. I resent the shortness of human life. And I've said this before because I resent it because it seems like our lives are just long enough for us to get into trouble and just short enough to keep us from being able to learn anything of real consequence. Do you think, honestly, do you think that we would be sitting here on a planet that is overheating and roasting if we had a 250-year lifespan and could actually see the impacts of what we were doing? Because I like to think, well, we wouldn't. Do you think maybe a longer lifespan would prevent horrors like the First and Second World Wars? If people could remember the horrors of, say, Gettysburg and Sedan.
You also have to take in mind.
But anyway, my grandfather, Ferg's great-grandfather, would be 120 years old today. He was a doughboy, so we'll be thinking of him this weekend. He went over in the great war to end all wars, what Woodrow Wilson described as the war to make the world safe for democracy, that turned out merely to be a great big global abattoir in which workers slaughtered workers. Yeah, it didn't quite work out so well. My eldest sister would have been 68 today as well, May the 23rd. She's been gone several years now. So just a lot of things to think about on this particular day as we wrap up the next to last week in May. We're going to be here in D.C. through the end of May. We'll be going home a week from Sunday. And we're getting as much work done here as we possibly can. The focus of all of our efforts has been to get the AIC Act introduced in the Senate. I mean, it's been a laser beam focus. And I still think we got a pretty good chance of it. It's going to take a lot more effort, though. We have been here in this building, in this apartment, for a little over 2 years. And we have, and by we, I don't mean Ferg and me or my family and I mean particularly the AIC team, as led specifically by my colleague and brother, Bo Webb, as well as others. We have done what was said could not be done, because we got a mountaintop removal abolition bill introduced in the Congress of the United States. We're abolitionists. There is no negotiating with the horror and terrorism that is the coal industry in its most virulent extractive form, to wit, mountaintop removal. They are truly the give them a centimeter and they will take 20,000 leagues type. But we did, we said, hey, we need a bill that's going to end mountaintop removal. Appalachian Voices said, you can't get one of those. We said, we need a bill that ends mountaintop removal. The Sierra Club said, you can't get one of those. We kept saying, we need a bill that ends mountaintop removal. And we heard, yeah, but, we can work within the confines of the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, and we can do it that way. Or, we can sue them company by company by company, and we'll get her done that way, sometime 1,000 years from now. They kept saying we couldn't do it. And then we came here and we did it. We did it. And we're not done with the work, but we are very close to done with this phase of it, because we're moving out of this facility. One of the central tenets of the AIC campaign as we conceived it was that we needed a permanent or semi-permanent presence up here to be able to react on the fly and to be able to constantly be hammering away at the issue. And we have done that. Bo Webb in particular has gone not only the extra mile, but the thousandth extra mile under heartbreaking circumstances. He has fundraised. He has knocked on doors. He has taken meetings. And he and I and the rest of the AIC team have been summarily ignored by the smarter, better people who know what the hillbillies really need. And we have had next to no support whatsoever. We've had support in the form of a blog post here and there. But the reason we're going to be moving out of this facility is because we can no longer afford it. And that's a fact. Some of you in the Horn family commune have even contributed to the AIC Act, and that has the AIC campaign, I should say, and that has helped us be here as long as we have been. but there has been no help from the big greens. And doesn't look like there's any coming in the future. It's sad. So we'll keep working. But we're not going to have a base of operations from which to work, and we're not going to be able to be here 24/7 for chunks of time. Because so many of the people who say they want to end mountaintop removal don't think that it's necessary to have people here to advance a bill that ends mountaintop removal. I mean, there are thousands of people, and I'm not directing this. I think maybe I'm just venting a little bit. I hope you'll bear with me. There's actual stuff to talk about out there. But there are thousands of people who say they want to end mountaintop removal. I've got way over 2,000 friends on my Facebook page, most of whom I never hear from. I think I've got close to 1,000 followers on Twitter. And others of us, Bo has a bunch of friends, Cold River Mountain Watch, of which the 8 campaign is a specific project, have oodles of followers. And there is a PayPal button at acheact.org. And here's what it boils down to, because, you know, I'm real good at that math stuff. If we had, let's see, how many? If we had 1,000 people. Now, as you hear, and those people are out there, but as you hear these numbers, understand, I'm not talking about the budget of, say, a Sierra Club that runs up into the millions. We're not talking about a Sierra Club budget that runs into the millions and millions of dollars, or who has an endowment of something like in excess of $50 million. We are talking about what, in terms of human rights and justice campaigning, amounts to chump change. If we had 1,000 people who would go to the AIC Act website, acheact.org, 1,000 people, 1,000 people who want to see mountaintop removal end, 1,000 people who want to see birth defects decrease dramatically in the sacrifice zone that is Central Appalachia. If we had 1,000 people who wanted mamas and daddies to live long enough to be grandmas and grandpas, if we had 1,000 people who wanted a few less hillbillies up the holler to get that speech from their doctor where the doctor looks at them all grim and says, well, you got cancer. If we had 1,000 people who wanted that and who could deprive themselves of one trip to McDonald's per month. No kidding. One trip to make, and by the way, those 1,000 people, their innards would thank them. You know, it's gotten to where a trip to McDonald's, even though McDonald's pays its employees crap, you can blow through the drive-thru at McDonald's and be out $50 before you knew what happened on a family of four. But I'm talking about a dollar value meal, or a value menu trip. You know, where maybe it's a sweet iced tea, a large fry, and a couple of McDoubles. Yeah, I know my liver's quivering too. I'm sorry. That's $5. If we had 1,000 people who would go to the ACAC.org website and subscribe and do a monthly contribution, a contribution that occurs once a month for five stinking dollars, we'd still have a permanent presence in Washington, D.C., and we wouldn't be trying to figure out if we've got enough money to rent a hotel room for two nights, or stay 50 miles out of town, subletting a Super 8 room from some cockroaches. 'Cause see, we've done that. Now, I'm not crawling up on the cross, because I know everybody else needs the wood. But we have proven ourselves here. We have proven our ability to get the job done. We have proven our ability to get the job done to the even going so far as making bricks without straw. I've been told. Yeah, never mind. Who gives a damn, huh? I mean, y'all do. But the Horn family commune congregation can't carry the ACAC campaign. And I'm not asking you to. I think right now I'm kind of just asking for your shoulder, I guess. But you guys know the score. I'm watching the chat room as I talk. Our buddy Psychoticus Rex says, these goodwill parasites like the Big Greens will intercept goodwill, charity, good intentions, and turn it into graft and pusillanimous sucking on the corporate teat. Psychoticus Rex says, hell, I'm too tired to curse enough. But that's the reality. So as we head homeward at the end of next week, we'll be trying to clear out a little stuff out of this little space. And then we'll try to figure out how to move forward from there. But it really is frustrating when you realize that a number as tiny as 1,000 people at $5 a month could make it possible for the next generation of children in Appalachia to grow up with a fighting chance at life itself. But you know what? That's life at the grassroots. Because for the most part, the grassroots exist as a... we're kind of a farm team for the Big Greens. If somebody steps up and really does some kick-ass work, one of the Big Greens will pick that person up and make a hero out of them and send their picture all over creation and ride their backs. And the next thing you know, maybe there will be an email going out saying, save the last gray hillbilly. It's what Devin was talking about last night. And if you'll send us $15, we'll send you a new canvas campaign bag, just like the one John Muir carried. You think I'm kidding. And if you listen, and you do, if you listen to this program, you know I've laid way the hell off. But this is a little frustrating. We're going to have to change tactics here in a broad and decided way and rethink how we're going to pursue this. Because the people who say because the organizations who say they want to end mountaintop removal won't support a law that actually ends mountaintop removal. And yeah, that's infuriating. It is past infuriating. It's go kick the furniture infuriating. How about that? Being infuriated. Happening on this program. That's a novelty. Yeah, I told you folks would be wandering into the chat room. Nice little crowd filling in now. Come on by. If you're not in already, Truth Seekers in, Psychotic, as I mentioned, me, Gimp, John, Beans with us. Good evening, Bean. Good evening, one and all the ships at sea. Oh, on this Friday, and an announcement. This is kind of a big deal. You know, while I'm up here, and because the Comrex unit is apparently smoked, literally, we haven't been able to access the traditional telephone lines that we maintain in the Horn Studio. But thanks to our buddy Psychoticus Rex. Well, previously the only way to contact the program was via Skype to Skype. In other words, your Skype account, this Skype account, and if you had a traditional telephone line, you were kind of screwed. I'm sorry, it's just what it was. But thanks to Psychoticus Rex, we now have an actual telephone number you can dial to get involved with the program. Now, it's not going to work during Friday on the front porch, I don't think. No, it's not. It is straight up not going to work during Friday on the front porch. But for individual conversations, it works just dandy. From a regular old, plain old telephone line into this Skype account here, which I can then bring on the air. Yeah, so maybe write this number down while we're still up here. If you want to call into the program and you don't have Skype, but you do have a plain old regular telephone, whether it be cell or wired into the wall or you know, what the hell ever. Area code 304-574-8178. Area code 304-574-8178. I don't know. Can anybody, does 8178 spell anything? Let's find out real quick. Eight, that's T-U-V. One is nothing at all. Nope, it doesn't spell anything. Oh, no, I thought I'd give up that quickly. So, U-1... P-T-P... U1RU. U1, are you? 304-574-8178 for individual calls into the program. And that'll even work when we get back, depending on how screwed up the telephone system is. I'm inspired, are you? Half past the hour. Thank you for putting up with my frustrated little babble. I have a sneaking suspicion that I'll be writing something similar to it and putting it up at ACAC.org, probably minus the remarks about how we've been unsupported by the folks who are sitting around on millions of dollars. But, yeah. Let's see. Where to go? Well, there's a couple of things out there. It is, in fact, Memorial Day weekend. And so necessarily, and this came out, this was published yesterday over at Crooks and Liars, and was mentioned briefly on the program, but deserves to be heard in its entirety and in its reality. You know, Memorial Day was born out of Decoration Day, when Southern ladies would go to decorate the graves of traitors from the Civil War. Isn't that where it comes from? Yeah. So over on Treason Central, you know, Fox News, Radio TV, Rwanda, they brought in a disgraced former military officer 2 days before the Memorial Day weekend to sleaze. Because remember, this particular individual is a busted torturer from our sick war on the people of Iraq. Yeah. Here then is Alan West. Alan West was a congressman for one term, and he proved himself so batshit crazy that even the teabaggers couldn't put him back in. He showed up, I'm sorry, it wasn't on Radio TV Rwanda, it was on Janet Mefford's show. Alan West has decided that he is an expert. All these self-appointed experts, what do you know? An expert on who Nancy Pelosi should have appointed to the kangaroo committee that's going to investigate Benghazi! And while he doesn't like Elijah Cummings being on there, and he doesn't like Adam Smith, and he doesn't like Adam Schiff, and he doesn't like Linda Sanchez, well, he's really pissed off about one particular appointee to the committee. Let's check in.
Now, this is kind of surprising. Nancy Pelosi now has appointed 5 members to the Select Committee on Benghazi, and this was previously something that they had indicated they weren't going to do. They were going to boycott the committee. Do you see that as good news or maybe a way of trying to manipulate the information and manipulate the process?
Well, you got to believe that they're very calculating. And when I look at the people that were announced, I know these individuals, and I can understand why they were selected. Again, if on one side of the mouth they're saying that this is something that should be dismissed, the words you said for the president is, you know, just sleight of hand. Now all of a sudden they're starting to bring up individuals that they want to have on that committee. Elijah Cummings should not be on that committee, especially when we know that he had a part in the emails on the House side with the IRS scandal probing conservative groups.
Right.
Which is another way of saying Elijah Cummings should not be on that committee because he's gonna go through Trey Gowdy like a knife through butter. He's gonna chew some of my little wingnut buddies up and spit them out. He's gonna embarrass us all day long, and we're not gonna get to turn this into the political circus attack on Hillary Clinton that we've all been having wet dreams about since 1992. That's what that means. But wait, there's more. If you order now,
Adam Schiff was just recently on Fox News saying that this all was a big political stunt. So that lets you know that he's not serious about this. Adam Smith, I can tell you, he was a ranking member on the Armed Services Committee when I was there, is just one of those geeky little debaters that is going to try.
What? He's one of those geeky little debaters? Apparently he's, I think that translates as, he handed me my ass more times than I can count. One of those geeky little debaters who relies on that logic stuff.
Well, there you go with that talk again. We talked about how you talk.
About to micromanage every single detail and, just like you say, just tie everything up in knots. Ms. Sanchez, the exact same thing. She's another one of those individuals that will, with the very whiny way that she has, to try to not get to the bottom of this, but tie it up.
Linda Sanchez is whiny. Whiny. This guy is the living Eddie Haskell, isn't he? So, Adam Smith is geeky, Linda Sanchez is whiny, Elijah Cummings has no business getting all uppity and being on the committee. That's three. Wonder about the other two.
And the last person, Tammy Duckworth, you know...
I probably should have said this a moment ago.
The last person...
Oh, darn it. We'll get it. Don't worry. I probably should have warned earlier. Get out the duct tape and the tennis balls. Because he's gotten around to Tammy Duckworth. Like I said, this got mentioned on the program last night. But when you actually hear it come out of this disgraced torturer's filthy, sleazy gob, it's kind of tough to take.
As to try to not get to the bottom of this, but tie it up. And the last person, Tammy Duckworth, you know, I just don't know where her loyalties lie. You know, for her to have been a veteran, a wounded warrior for the United States Army, she should know that this is not the right thing. And hopefully, you know, she will remember the oath of office that she took as an Army officer and not the allegiance that I guess she believes she has to the liberal progressives of the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
One, dipshit, it is the Democratic Party. It is not the Democrat Party. He's still operating on that Newt Gingrich word list from back when Newt was banging a gong with a woman, an intern, not his wife. Oh, hi, Calista. How are you? Secondly, I don't know where her loyalties lie. Now, Alan West, remember, disgraced himself, disgraced his oath, disgraced his country, and disgraced his flag, and disgraced his uniform by being a torturer. And he feels empowered and privileged enough to question, because that's what it means when you say, I don't know where her loyalties lie, to question the loyalty
of a woman who left limbs on a battlefield. Regardless of whether we had any business on that battlefield, she left limbs on it. But then again, this is par for the course with the Ripig-Lickin' Party. Remember they questioned the loyalty of another guy who left limbs on another battlefield, Max Cleland? I think I mentioned that the guy who did that, the guy who put out an advertisement, a political ad, campaign ad that showed Max Cleland's face morphing into the face of Osama bin Laden. He's gotten tired of serving in the Senate, and he's a retiring now that he's gone. Now that he's made himself a little bundle, and he can go and just take that long walk to the, you don't even take the long walk to the computer any, or to the mailbox anymore. It's more like a brief shuffle over to the computer. And here is a man who disgraced everything about this country by becoming a torturer, questioning the loyalty of an... And, you know, the torturer brought home all of his various appendages. And he has the nerve to question the loyalty, the Americanness of a woman who left limbs on a battlefield. See how it works? Yeah. Nasty, ain't they? And he dared, I hope she'll remember her oath as an officer. Why? Should she then forget her oath as a member of the Congress of the United States? Whew. Don't look for any forthcoming apologies from Alan West. You'd wait a long time for those. But as John Amato pointed out over at Crooks and Liars, there's really nothing new in this because Ripig-Lickins and Teabaggers have been sleazing and sliming Tammy Duckworth for quite some time. This is from a year ago.
But understand something about John McCain. His political advisors, day after day, had to take him and almost throw him against a wall and hit him against the head and say, Senator, you have to let people know you served. You have to talk about what you did. He wouldn't want to, he didn't want to do it, wouldn't do it. Day after day, they had to convince him. And finally, he talked a little bit about it, but it was very uncomfortable for him. That's what's so noble about our heroes. Now, I'm running against a woman who, I mean, my God, that's all she talks about. Our true heroes, the men and women who served us, it's the last thing in the world they talk about. That's why we are so indebted and in awe of what they have done.
Yeah, that was Joe Walsh, deadbeat dad, criticizing Tammy Duckworth for having even, and understand, Tammy Duckworth is not one of those members of Congress that gets me all worked up because she's not that progressive, certainly not a liberal. But there has to be a line somewhere, doesn't there? And whoever said that John McCain doesn't talk about having been in the military? Oh please, that was a year ago when Joe Walsh said that Tammy Duckworth wasn't a real hero. Irish Dave asking, is Alan the Wild West going after Tammy Death from Above Duckworth, a a Kettle Meat Post deal or what? IRS and Benghazi are joined at the hip going back to the Fast and Furious topless review. I don't even want to think about the Fast and Furious topless review. That would involve like a naked Daryl Issa and sequins or something, wouldn't it? God, take it easy. We're only 45 minutes into Friday on the Front Porch, Irish Dave. Give a man a break. And by the way, it's about 14 minutes before the hour. If you want to participate in the Friday on the Front Porch group, which is otherwise known as the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, send a contact request, if you haven't before, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, who is a big part of our all-volunteer staff. And he moderates and has for years, every Friday night, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Man, some of those chats can get really rousing and can roll on into the wee hours of the morning, whether you be on the East Coast or the West Coast, or, in some cases, Taiwan. They're fun. They're a lot of fun. You know, by the way, going back to, and we'll be going to the Friday on the Front Porch group later in the evening as soon as I get the bat signal from Sparky. Irish Dave pointing out, you do know that Tammy Duckworth chose to fly a helicopter since that was one of the few combat MOSs for girls. And those Black Hawk helicopters aren't used for medevac either. Handpicked by Rom, son of Irgun, is enough warning for me, Irish Dave says. By the way, Democrat Party was created by Tail Gunner Joe. McCarthy? I thought that, well, maybe, but I thought that went back to the, I've always read that went back to the Gingrich How to Use Language list. One way or the other. It's fine by me. I wanted to point out something for your consideration because I point out things for your consideration when things strike me as being really profound and pretty important. And that is an interview with Salon's Elias Isquith by David K. Johnston. You may very well recall that David K. Johnston is the author of Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print. Way, way, way back about a million or 10 years ago when I read Perfectly Legal, my eyes just sort of bugged out to realize the degree to which the system was set up. I mean, we've always known, hell, I was raised knowing that the game is different for a certain class of people in this country. But in Perfectly Legal, David K. Johnston really laid it out in clear, bold terms. And then he followed it up with the other two books in his trilogy, Free Lunch, which is about corporate welfare and welfare for rich people. You know, the people who really do go to the grocery store and load up the buggy with the Alaska King crab legs. And then The Fine Print, which had to do with Sherman antitrust type stuff, if we actually ever enforced that law. So there is an excellent interview between David K. Johnston and Elias Isquith over at Salon. It's called Bloodiest Thing the World Has Seen, David K. Johnston on Inequality's Looming Disaster. And the article and the interview is especially good because it draws a line between David K. Johnston's work and the current media crush over Piketty, which I have not yet finished. Started, not finished. And thanks to Dr. John, I do have a better appreciation of what's going on there, because yeah, Piketty says that it's possible for capitalism to fix itself, which I think in the end is rather considerably Pollyanna-ish. But that's the jumping-off place for this interview. And within the first question, David K. Johnston, who was a brilliant reporter with the New York Times and then went on to be an even better reporter and documentarian. You know, you don't have to be making films to do documentaries. He creates documents about inequality. I mean, that's what Perfectly Legal was, and Free Lunch and Fine Print. He says that he actually placed great reliance on a lot of Monsieur Piketty's earlier work before the book came out. But early on, he says this in the interview. As Herbert Stein, Richard Nixon's chief economic advisor, famously said, a trend will only continue as long as it can. That's got a little zenness to it, doesn't it? A trend will only continue as long as it can. It sort of leaves it open-ended, doesn't it? A trend only continues until something stops it. It will not ever voluntarily stop itself. And that's a good jumping-off point for the question of how we deal with the ongoing issue of inequality in this country. David K. Johnston continues, we will either, through peaceful, rational means, go back to a system that does not take from the many to give to the few in all these subtle ways, or we will end up like 18th century France. And if we end up in that awful condition, it will be the bloodiest thing the world has ever seen. So I think it's really important to get a handle on this inequality. Now, we have some students of history. We have a lot of students of history in the Horn Family Commune congregation. And if you sit there for a minute and you contemplate the circumstances that led to the French Revolution and the terror and the tumbrils and the guillotines, if you think about the intersection of an aristocratic elite with a wholly corrupt religious infrastructure and an absolute, not disdain, but contempt for the working people who make a country go, maybe David K. Johnston's onto something. Now, I'm not saying that I want to tie the Koch brothers' hands behind them and put them in a straw-filled tumbril and lead them there to the square and march them up to the guillotine and lop their nasty little noggins off or anything and grab their bloody hairy heads up out of the basket and show it to the crowd and listen to the crowd roar its approval. I'm not saying that because I don't want to do that. Because when you start lopping the heads off the royalty, sooner or later they're going to come around and lop yours off too. Robespierre learned that the hard way. So did Jean-Paul Marat. He got murdered in his bathtub, didn't he, Marat? But anyway, that sentence alone is enough to send you off thinking about what an American apocalypse like that would look like. Here's a hint. This is America. We'll get it wrong. We'll start lopping the heads off of people that haven't caused the problems and put the pull string in Charles and David Koch's hands. In many ways, we already have. But apparently, David K. Johnston, and he admits it later on, has a much more optimistic streak than I. He says, it's really important to get a handle on this inequality. And he gives some of the damning statistics that you already know. He said, we need to recognize there is a very, very serious problem here that has to get addressed. But it won't just go on forever, because if you follow that to its logical absurdity, one person ends up with 90% of the wealth in the world. And that's not going to happen. Oh, I'll be damned. House Harkonnen. Son of a gun. Where's Brother Albert when you need him? He continues, I certainly am worried that we could end up in a violent revolution somewhere in the future, sparked by extreme inequality. I'm an indictable optimist and believe that if the American people have access to explanations and information, they will, over the long run, make smart choices. I think you have to say that or you just run screaming into the night. Because otherwise it's, no, because otherwise the future becomes intolerable to even think about. Those 250-year lifespans I was talking about, I still think it would help. But do you realize how hard it actually is? And I know your first inclination is probably going to say, no, nah, Bob, you're crazy. Do you realize how hard it is to kill a human being? And this is the part where you say, what about car wrecks? What about people getting hit by the bus? What about? Those are accidents that are not deliberate in nature. If you really want to selectively end lives, it's a challenge. Look how hard it was for Oklahoma to murder a couple of its prisoners. But, you know, that's because there's a parameter set on the murder that says, you know, you can't just throw them in a pit and let lions tear them apart. Because we have this notion that we as a nation should be above that, although I think if you probably polled the American public, they would say, what? Lions tearing somebody apart? I'm okay with it if you put it on TV. Think of it as Idiocracy's Monday Night Rehabilitation. It is so hard to deliberately kill a person without just engaging in four-square brutality that Governor Haslam of Tennessee, Stan, has just signed into law the ability of the Department of Corrections of the state of Tennessee to dust off its old electric chair. Wow. What were we talking about, inequality? Is there anything at all left of the values that we consider to be American? Tennessee can't reliably murder people with horizontal crucifixion. So they're going to see if they can't just run some current, start running current through people again until they finally catch fire and die. Because, see, this is the interesting thing. Now that we know what we know about electrocution and stuff, shouldn't that be struck down by the Supreme Court as cruel and unusual? And, hey, what about the constitutional originalists over here, my next-door neighbors, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia? There weren't no electrocution. There weren't no electric chairs when the framers framed up the Constitution. It can't possibly be constitutional because it's not originalism. Yeah, but you can almost hear Scalia. Yeah, but I'd kind of like to see the little bastards fry. It's fun. Daddy told me it was a lot of fun going around smashing skulls. You know, he was a fascist, Daddy was. I mean, look, I mentioned horizontal crucifixion. Look at crucifixion. Crucifixion was reserved for traitors and treason committers and enemies of the state. And sometimes crucifixion victims would have to hang for days. And as a matter of mercy, one of the executioners would come up and break a couple of legs to hustle the process along. The nature of human life is to try to stay here. And it's the nature of people to try to, unless they're teabaggers, to try to kind of mind their own business. But we are fast running away from that. David K. Johnston says, we live in a country now where we have members of Congress who have either questioned or ignored questions about killing the President of the United States. We are seeing all these laws passed allowing people to carry guns openly. We are coming apart as a society, and inequality is right at the core of that. When the 90% are getting worse off and they're trying to figure out what happened, they're not people like me who get to spend 4 or 5 hours a day studying these things and then writing about them. They're people who have to make a living and get through life, and they're going to be swayed by demagogues and filled with fear about the other rather than bringing us together. So much for that indictable optimism, huh? Oh, he's got a list, David K. Johnston does. He says, we have suggestions that the president should be killed, that he's not an American, that Texas can secede, that states can ignore federal law. And these are things that I don't lack for antecedents, that don't lack for antecedents in American history. But they're clearly on the rise. In addition to that, we have this large, very well-funded news organization that is premised on misconstruing facts and telling lies, Fox News, formerly Fox News, F-A-U-X, formerly F-O-X, that is creating in a large segment of the population, somewhere around one-fifth and one-fourth of it, belief in all sorts of things that are detrimental to our well-being. President Theodore Roosevelt said we shall all rise together or we shall all fall together, and we need to have an appreciation of that. And then even David K. Johnston can't resist a little bit of futuristic prognostication. He says, if we don't get a handle on this, then one of these days our descendants are going to sit down in high school history class and open a textbook that begins with the words, the United States of America was. And then it will dissect how our experiment in self-governance came apart. See, this is where I think maybe he and I part company. Because ultimately, if the right wing have their way, there will be no high school history classes because there will be no high schools. You know, it was really rather a long time ago now. It was back in the reign of Reagan. When Jerry Falwell said public education needed to be destroyed and education be returned to the churches where it belongs. That way won't nobody be learning that demon biology. I'm no kin to the monkey, no, no, no. The monkey's no kin to me, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know about, but I didn't swing from a tree, dum, dum. They're not going to dissect anything about how America came apart because they're going to be too busy scrabbling for maybe 750 calories a day to live on. And he goes on to talk about how the framers felt about inequality, and he presents a compelling case. And interviewer asks him about solutions. And bless his heart, he presents some. But it seems to me that this that the solutions are awfully hard to get at. But this is well worth your time to go and read. Read all of it, and maybe go and get your hands on the new book of essays by David K. Johnston. It is called Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. And the name of the article at Salon is Bloodiest Thing the World Has Seen, David K. Johnston on Inequality's Looming Disaster. Can you imagine something like the French Revolution taking place here? Oddly enough, the French Revolution only happened after the American one. They had us as a model, and we had had our revolution only because of the agreement of the French aristocracy to support us. So we were kind of in a pinch. People like Franklin and Jefferson were avowed Francophiles, whereas John Adams was much more inclined to the British. And they saw us fight a revolution, but the French realized that they were not a colony rebelling against a mother country. They were the mother country. And that there was no way to fight a war against an army. That's one of the essential differences between the American and French revolutions. And so when their revolution came, they realized there had to be a house cleaning. But I've become a little bit cynical. My father's generation, my father and mother's generation, that believed that America could do anything it set its mind to. A generation whose engineers made it possible for us to go to the moon. They're gone. They're gone. And have been replaced by a generation that has been told by Republicans going all the way back to Ronald Reagan, no, we can't. We're too poor. We're too dumb. We're too broke. Ronald Reagan may have had an ad that said it was more, that it was morning in America. But by God, it was morning in the asylum, not morning on the city, in the city on the hill. Because see, the clowns with Operation American Spring, the yahoos with the high-powered rifles and the scopes out there, talking to protecting Clavern Bundy. The idiots we talked about earlier this week who have a who had a billboard yanked in Montgomery that said secede. They want that revolution. They want to start shooting. And while no one's in, no one's paying me to say, you know, go and buy your apocalypse seeds and all your freeze-dried peanut butter sticks and whatnot for, you know, when... No, bullshit. It sometimes feels like we're closer than we know. And see, here's another thing. Within the context of that interview with David K. Johnston, the talk was mainly sociological and financial. Hello, it's me. Climate change? Anybody? Yeah, it's going to make a little bit of a difference. Because I've still got it in my head that it's going to be a big damn deal. I mean, look how well we handled the necessity to evacuate one of America's oldest cities. Look how well we handled the Ninth Ward, lower Ninth Ward. Yeah. Oh, I get the idea. I get the idea sometimes that there's a hair trigger involved with this, with the entire culture here. Ever since I saw those projections of the sea level rise, you know, the one that, you know, because everybody keeps talking about a 10-foot rise or a 4-foot rise. If you dig into the literature, you'll find what they're really talking about is a 69-foot rise over the next couple or 300 or 400 years. And that's that sea level rise that puts the Potomac, no, it's not even the Potomac anymore, it's just the Atlantic Ocean sloshing around in the front yard of the United States Capitol. That means the Department of Education's underwater. So is the Department of Health and Human Services. So is the Justice Department. So is the Internal Revenue. So are the archives. So is the FBI. Yeah. May you live in interesting times, right? Am I just weird, or is anybody else out there thinking about this? What a not-too-distant future world looks like. Yeah. What does it look like where you are? I mean, I already live in a place that's kind of apocalyptic, you know, West Virginia, Appalachia. It's been apocalyptic there for 100 years. Might be hard to kill a human being with any degree of mercy, but by God, it has proven very easy to kill human beings if you didn't give a good old-fashioned damn back there. It's interesting to consider. where a 2 foot sea level rise imperils something like 5.5 million American citizens. And as it gets worse, Florida just disappears. Now, you want the ultimate irony? Florida disappears. Even with a 69-foot sea level rise, there's still a whole bunch of Cuba left over. And a whole bunch of Hispaniola, you know, Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Bahamas, gone. Some of the Caribbean islands remain, at least their mountain peaks. Puerto Rico and Jamaica remain because they're mountainous. Appalachia, or what's left of it, will remain. But in a larger sense, what I'm suggesting is that these questions surrounding inequality have to be considered within the context of climate change that is and climate catastrophe that is happening much faster than even the scientists were willing to warn us. Todd in the chat room says, yeah, I'm thinking about it, Bob. I've been thinking about it for 30 years. That's why I've chosen not to reproduce and put my children through whatever is coming. Todd says, I've been weird for a long time. I don't think that's weird. Well, Agnes and I do have children and grandchildren now. And the question is, how do you talk to them about it? You remember all those ads that the Partnership for a Drug-Free America gave us through the 80s and when Nancy Reagan was telling us to just say no? And they were the ads, you know, this is your brain on drugs. You know, dude, are you going to eat that? But, you know, talk to your children about drugs. Okay. That gets a little bit uncomfortable, though, because eventually the kids look at you and go, how do you know all this stuff about drugs, Mom and Dad? I got a pamphlet from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America. Okay, shut up. Talk to your kids about drugs? Bullshit. Talk to your kids about sea level rise. Talk to your kids about massive human migrations. Talk to your kids about famine and failing crops and the loss of clean, potable water. Like from the toilet? Talk to your kids about that. Try to have a plan for that. So, I mean, that's just my thinking. You sure will get your noggin going, that kind of thing, though. By the way, thanks again going out to Henry for getting us started on fundraising this evening. We have only... $60 more to go to make our fundraising goal for the evening. No one has jumped in to help Henry out. Don't leave Henry sitting there lonely. Thank you, one and all. You know where the PayPal button is, right? We'll take a break and come back to Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. And being Friday on the Front Porch, you can bring just about anything to the table you want to. So jump into the Horn Molloy Skype chat group as moderated by our good and indefatigable volunteer staff friend Sparky. And we'll get her going here in a few minutes. Break time on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
time ago, came a man on a track, walking 30 miles with a sack on his back. And he put down his load where he thought it was the best, made a home in the wilderness.
Yeah. shut it down. I got a right to go to work, but there's no work here to be found. Yes, and you see, we're gonna have to pay what's owed. We're gonna have to reap from some seed that's been sown.
Probably one of the most underappreciated of Dire Straits albums, Telegraph Road, 1982. And I love that track. And just with all the sort of apocalyptic talk I was wallowing in, I couldn't resist going to it. It is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. And the Friday on the Front Porch crew is gathered together. Good evening, gang. Jeffrey's with us. Grant's with us. John Q. Public is with us. Psychotic as Rex. Haley's with us. Larry's with us. Sergio.
Hello.
And of course, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you, Sparky? What's happening?
I'm fine, but I'm just letting you know now. If I have to run off, I run off.
Nothing further need be said.
Okay.
You just run off and we'll talk amongst ourselves, okay?
Okay, it's been a hectic couple of days.
I get that sense, yes. And we won't go into detail.
No, you don't want any details at all.
Good enough.
Yeah.
So, good evening, Horn Malloy Skype chat group. What's happening?
Hey, Bob.
Evening.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, I wanted to bring something up. Tomorrow, about 11 a.m., all over the place is Monsanto against a march against Monsanto.
Yeah, I saw that, Grant. And you got any details?
Evidently, there's a website. I don't have it on me right now, but just look for March Against Monsanto. There's a website, and you can look up, and it's got a little Google map, so you can look up in your local area where they're gathering.
Okay, so a quick search of March Against Monsanto?
Yeah, I guess the best bet.
All right, this is an awkward silence.
Mark. Just getting the link for you there. March Against Monsanto. It's apparently on the 25th.
Most places. I was afraid the call had dropped.
There's a lot on the 24th. There's one or two on the 25th. It depends on where you're at. You should check the website to see where you're at.
Yeah, the map will tell you. You can zoom right into your locality, and then it'll give you the date and the time, or the location and the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Well, they're mighty unpopular.
They haven't exactly been working to win hearts and minds, have they?
No, not at all.
It's like the PR company.
They're working the ham-fisted side of the street.
Yeah, brute force and lobbyists. I think that's their whole thing.
Yeah, see, a great observation coming in from Irish Dave. He says, on the day before the revolution, who knew that it was the day before the revolution? And I get real uncomfortable talking about revolution stuff. Real uncomfortable, real fast. Because, see, I'm not one of these people that thinks that, hey, Groovy, the apocarev is here. Dude, we've caught a rattlesnake. Now we've got something for dinner. I can't resist that.
Yeah, I wish I had a lawnmower.
Yeah, see, right. I love that song. I just love it.
Also, if you don't find it on the website, I know my town is not on the website, but I've seen banners all up around the town saying that there'll be a merch period as well.
Yeah, that website's hard to get around.
They mean well.
Because all I can see is Africa, Australia, Central America, Europe, and then still loading rows 102 through 409.
See, I mean, ultimately, Monsanto, human beings have done a lot to themselves to put ourselves in this position that we're in. But it's outfits like Monsanto that are trying to push us over the edge. I've got a question in particular for Jeffrey, just because I always appreciate having some sort of international perspective on this. It is such a struggle for us to get climate change taken seriously. You're in an environment that is considerably more precarious where sea level rise is concerned. Is it as big a chore over there?
Yes, it is, in the sense that the sea levels are rising and it will affect us. Yes, yeah. It will be bad, I guess. Not I guess, I know it will be bad because we're under, let's see, two-thirds of the month is under, a few meters under the sea level.
Yeah, but
already.
But you don't, the Dutch citizenry doesn't have a bunch of idiots running around calling climate change a hoax, do you?
No, that, they don't take those people seriously, so.
So,
and you don't have people doing that.
So my question then is, in a country that's taking climate change as deadly seriously as it is, what do y'all think about the United States and the apparent reign of fools that we have going on over here?
Example, today I listened to Dutch radio, a news station, and you have, there are in the Balkan, I don't know the English translation, but in the Balkan, East Europe, they have floods over there right now, right? And they, it's coming closer, you can say, so.
Okay.
We don't take it lightly. So,
well, what kind of plans are being made? What kind of things are being done?
The only thing you can do is make way for the water. So, you make how do you call that?
Dikes.
More room for the waterways.
And you, I mean, you have the polder system over there, right?
That's true. And look at the dams, the polders. Only for that, when the time comes that that it won't hit too hard.
It's frightening. What has there been much talk on your news about the word out regarding the Antarctic sea ice melt?
Yes, Radio One, it's our news radio station, had a piece on it. So they delved into it quite a bit. I think that it's going to be bad, man. It's not going to be. We mustn't take it lightly.
Well, and see, just to give you an example, I asked if it was being covered in your media over there, Jeffrey, because here's how it plays out over here. CNN, for instance, the domestic American CNN, CNN International is still a different animal. But the domestic CNN, I noticed today, had a story about a near miss between two airliners taking off from George H.W. Bush International Airport in Houston, and which is a frightening story.
Yes.
Two airliners coming close enough that disaster could have been easily have happened. But
yes.
CNN takes this story about two planes and a near miss and turns it into a story about the missing jetliner in Malaysia.
Huh.
And they have probably devoted 1,000 minutes for probably 10,000 minutes of Malaysian airliner coverage for any minute that they've devoted to climate change. And at this point in time, I'm just looking at CNN as, and this is more of an American reference, but you know, pick your favorite vacuous, meaningless Dutch tabloid. CNN has become the Us Weekly of American journalism.
That's it. But we take climate change very seriously over here, so.
And that's not just the Netherlands. That's Europe generally, right?
Yes, I know from Germany also, England. I saw BBC and ITV4. They had a piece on there were storms over there a few months ago. Very bad. It was very bad, and they take it seriously also. Because the climate is changing in a rapid tempo, so doesn't look good. I don't know what's going to be next, but until now it's a bit frightening, I guess. It has to be taken seriously, and people who show it from the sidelines that it isn't. Yeah, they don't take those people seriously over here.
I guess the larger thing that I think about is how if the entire rest of the world is taking climate change seriously and the United States is not, what position does that leave the rest of the world in?
I know that there is a corp. Oh yeah, before I go further, fracking, right?
Sadly,
they also
yes.
wanted to frack over here, so but they folded them away, so it didn't go through.
Well, you know, Joe Biden went to Ukraine a few weeks back and told them that the way out of their dilemma was to frack themselves, to frack their way to freedom.
Yeah, that's bad, man. It's just a dirty, dirty trick. Manipulate people into that.
Well, I really do. I really do appreciate your input, Jeffrey.
No, my English is not that perfect, but I'm how do you call it? Happy that I can say a few words. So.
No, your English is just fine, Jeffrey, and it It's got night and day over my Dutch, so I'm happy about that. Oh, I see we've also been joined this evening by Waggy. Good evening, Waggy.
I hope he's there.
Well, his avatar is.
He's typing.
Oh, okay.
In the chat, so he may be busy.
No worries, no worries.
Has anybody else been watching the series Years of Living Dangerously on Showtime?
I keep hearing about it.
Well, I've been downloading it, but from that place.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right.
But I was going to say there was one deal about they went to Holland, the Netherlands, to see what they were doing, and they went to visit a farmer. And they moved to this hill. They built this hill up and built his house up there on the hill. And they allowed, when the water rises, his farm gets flooded. He has to let the farm get flooded. The government paid for it all.
Well, see, that way lies communism, right? Right, Sparky?
I would guess so, but it helps the country.
See, we used to have that notion of working toward the good of the country as a whole, and I mean, was it during the Reagan years that we lost it? I mean, because the more I look at it, it seems like the Reagan years were a time in which we preached a sort of phony baloney patriotism that was really only a cover for anti-American corporatism.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it got swallowed by crass jingoism. You know, it just got slid over, and so it was always, you know, it always seemed to be, you know, one enemy after the next. We, you know, we got to go kick ass in Grenada. Oh, you know, now we got to go kick ass over here and over here. And it just kept, you know, leapfrogging. But lost in all of that is any sense of having real, like, substantial national goals.
Yeah.
You know? That just went by the wayside. It's like Roman theater or something.
That's another thing that occurred to me as I was watching the CNN story about the near-miss aircraft. And because at one point the bemused talking head said, and no one really knows what's happening. And I thought, okay, dumbasses, what's happening? Reagan happened. Every time one of these things happens, there's all you have to do is say, oh, Reagan, got it.
Oh, are you talking about the air traffic controllers?
Yeah.
They've been talking for years about turning that into a fully automated system, and it's such a controlled system, you could probably get away with it, except for the time when a guy decides, I'm not going to listen to him. At which point, then what? You know, a computer is not really good at handling intransigent, stupid people like that billionaire who decided to blow through an entire control network and land on the wrong runway with his private jet.
Yeah, but that exposes one of the essential problems with air traffic, and that is you can't pull an airplane over on the side of the sky. But
there are missile systems.
that's pulling over with extreme prejudice. But I'm sure we've got plans in place to be able to do that. But a computerized system, in this case, it was neither of the pilots' fault. They were doing what they were told. It appears that, you know, somebody in the tower just sort of dropped the ball or didn't talk to somebody else in the tower, and you had one guy turning into the flight, but one plane turning into the flight path of another plane. But then, honest to God, when they segued it into a graphic that showed the Malaysian air flight turning hard left, what? Really?
Why didn't they just cut to snakes on a plane or something? It would have been as topical.
Well, that's why I said CNN has become the American version of, or the TV journalism version of Us Weekly.
Honestly, I really don't see the point of television anymore. I'm sure journalism can exist somewhere, but I just don't think it's ever going to happen on TV. If it ever did, it's by accident. You read a paper, read a magazine, read a book, but don't go to TV. What the hell can they tell you in 30 seconds? Really, but weather is pushing it for them. Their weather segment is usually larger than any individual news segment. So if it's more complicated than the weather, which most human things are, you're screwed. You might learn, person was angry at other person today. Be afraid. You know, what else are they going to say?
And I think you've identified something there, Psychoticus, because one of the most watched cable channels out there is the Weather Channel, isn't it?
It's the most popular channel in Canada. It's quite amazing that, you know, people go to it and they stay on it and they will talk about the weather and then maybe they'll turn over to CBC or CTV, depending on their prejudices. And that's it. A lot of them don't even turn to the other channels anymore just because there's just nothing there. It's so vapid.
And maybe that, I mean, is that why Fox is as popular as it is? Because even though they're lying, they're lying interestingly.
They're engaged in it. They seem like they care about something. They don't all look like they've had a stroke. Now, have a facial expression. Give a damn about something. We're reporting that millions of people died. It's like if you're watching a cartoon character of a journalist. Now for some sad news. You know, it's pathetic. He's working hard at making a facial expression. I mean, you can see him strain himself as he's trying to raise his eyebrows in the appropriate inclination.
This is the best description of something like CNN I've heard in ages.
Oh, we have one guy at the Toronto CFTO, it's the right-wing rag station. And forever we've known, he just really likes seeing himself in a camera. He is blissed out by seeing his perfect hair, his perfectly coiffed mane, his perfect teeth, his perfect makeup, his perfect suit. Nothing is ever out of alignment. He's like a parody of a mannequin. The fact that he has to read only interrupts him from looking at himself in a feedback monitor.
By the way, I got to throw this out there since we do have a Canadian in the conversation this evening. You guys are on the way to losing your status as really, really nice people, Psychoticus. I don't mean you.
I'm probably responsible. Yeah.
No, it's not you. It's not you. I think it's flowing downhill from Stephen Harper. I wish you guys would do something about him.
It's flowing out of something of Rob Ford's. I know that.
There was a story I ran across over at Think Progress earlier today, and it's just a little anecdote. And granted, nobody was waterboarded, and nobody was shipped off to Syria and kept in a 6-foot by 3-foot box for a year and tortured. You know, we did that to a Canadian. But a journalist by the name of Emily Atkin traveled to Canada all the way to Fort McMurray, Alberta, and was going through customs. And a Canadian Border Service Agency official says to her, "What brings you to Fort Mac?" And she says, "I'm a journalist. I'm here to see the tar sands." And so, boom, she gets shifted over to border security. And then the border security guy says, What are you doing in Canada? And she says, "I'm here to see the tar sands." At which point, border security guy says, "Oh, you mean oil sands. We don't have tar here." And so he then looks at her and says, "We might have to send you back to the States." Because her papers were not in order. And she called a friend at a nearby hotel and said, this guy at border security says I need working papers or something, and he's going to send me back to the States. And at which point he jumps and says, why'd you say I was going to send you back to the States? See, you're already misrepresenting what's going on up here. The word has gone out that there will be no unhappy tidings of the hell on earth that's being created in the tar sand sacrifice zone.
Bob, they did the same thing with the Vancouver Olympics when that lady from Democracy Now! Came up. They stole a laptop off her, wiped a few drives.
Oh, Amy Goodman.
Gave her the, you know, she was up here for a speech on her new book, and are you going to talk about the Olympics? Well, wasn't before this, but I might discuss it now that you've brought it up. You know, if there's a question and answer, I might talk about it a bit, but that's about it. It wasn't my intent of my journey, but they couldn't believe her. And so they kept her for like 3-4 hours and made her late for a speech and blah, 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 just because they were so worked up over this. Now, that's a knee-jerk reaction when something political comes up, but you're not going to hear anything out of Alberta. I'm surprised she flew into Fort Mac. Usually you fly into somewhere civilized and then go up to Fort Mac. But Alberta, especially northern Alberta, is a bit of a undeclared civil war zone. There are people being murdered all over the northern province, and there are things blowing up all the time. Now, they're blaming it on gang warfare, but it seems employers are taking a big brunt of it, and employees and crews not just being seen again, apparently taking off, and they're blaming it on drugs, and, oh, they went back to their own province or state.
Yeah, meanwhile, there are these cancer clusters down in Fort Chip that are also being ignored. They tried. We had the story a couple of weeks back of how they tried to pull the medical license of the doctor who had identified the disease process. He was eventually invited down to the United States to testify before the Senate. And you know, it's the same kind of stuff we deal with in Appalachia. What cancer? Oh, you got cancer? Well, yeah, hell, everybody gets cancer sooner or later, don't they? You know, the ones that the heart attacks don't get.
We've got so much information out there about cancer. So many people are familiar with it, and it's become so ubiquitous. We're actually losing our shock. Oh my God, he got cancer, and so many people are living through it. It's like, yo, I got my nails done or some crap like that. It's, no, this is life-threatening illness. It really is. You know, it's not getting your teeth pulled or
extension put in. Right there, Psychoticus, is part of it. There has been created this notion that, you know, cancer, you got cancer. Yeah, we'll fix that. I don't think it's quite like that yet. Because you know, I know a whole bunch of hillbillies that are resting under the dirt. By the way, just to give you an idea, a little more international perspective, Robert has just now written in from Australia. And he says, thinking about the future and the effects of sea level rise, have you ever seen a picture of the Sydney Opera House? And I think most of us have. I have. He says, the walkway around it isn't more than 1.5 meters above sea level. He says, I was listening to a discussion on ABC-FM last week, that's the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. The glaciers of West Antarctica have reached the point of no return. And he provides a link, QLDstorms.com. They're going to melt. They cannot be stopped. And when they do, sea level will rise at least 3 to 4 meters. The timeline given for this is over the next several centuries. Goodbye, Sydney Opera House. At least the sails will look in place. Sydney has a lot of harborfront properties, which will become worthless. Robert says, I'm worried, not about property prices, but about our new crop of federal politicians, that they're more concerned with the economy. Australia has a lot to worry about from climate change, so necessarily that means they've got Tony Abbott, who is a complete idiot, and says that, you know, it's not real.
Well, from what I read on that report when it came out, it's sort of a piling on. They knew it was going to be bad, And then they see all these giant cracks opening up around this fissure. And we know from previous times when ice shelves have dissolved in front of bounded ice lakes, ice seas, ice plateaus, whatever, that those plateaus find the egress route that's been opened up very, very efficient. And so it's not that they just all slip off into the water like a ship being launched. It's that they just go down in height until they basically disappear. They turn from a ice plateau into a series of small glaciers and then feeder glaciers and then into no glaciers at all. And they do that in a decade or two at most. So it wasn't a couple centuries. It's, yes, that's what the old systems used to do, but remember, all the old systems that get approved of at an international level are based on linear projections. They're not allowed, literally not allowed to use geometric projections on any vector, any input,
or any sort of
exponential. Don't understand them.
But isn't the feedback loop exponential in nature?
It can be merely geometric, but it's still better than linear. So you can have very rapid jumps over short periods of time. It's not going to keep going on. Once the ice is gone, it's not going to keep, you know, there's not going to be anti-ice being created that melts other ice or something.
And the thing is, you know, that this you know, they expect it to happen in the next several centuries. Well, that raises a larger question. And I remember first thinking about this or being led to think about this when I was reading the first time I read years and years and years ago Joseph Heller's Catch 22. Because there's this old man who lives in the whorehouse, and he laughs at one of the characters and asks, "Do you think America will last forever?" And of course, the patriotic young soldier says, "Of course it will." Well, I mean, when I sit here and think about, because I do, and again, maybe it means I just need to be medicated. I need just enough of some sort of medication to make me think that Dancing with the Stars is good television, or that television is good at all. Because I stand on the street corner over next to the cart of the guy who sells the dirty water half smokes on the corner of 2nd and Maryland, and they're really good hot dogs. And I look across at the Capitol. And I try to imagine, you know, 6 inches of water around it. And in the past, because I'm 51 and I don't feel old. I remember that, and it was a stunning image because I guess it had never been presented before. But you know, that final image from Planet of the Apes back when Charlton Heston didn't suck. And he wasn't running around waving guns at people. But that final image from Planet of the Apes, when you see the Statue of Liberty all silted up and just a little bit of her sticking up out of the sand. And that creates a willingness inside an imagination. And anybody who has ever seen the ruins of ancient Greece or Rome or Egypt or Petra in Jordan, it's the same thing. To see things that were built to be permanent, or the temples of Mesoamerica, to see things that people built grandly to remain permanent, reduced to shells of their former selves. I mean, things like Tintern Abbey and the other Tintern Abbey in Ireland, that are just shells. And God knows how many hours of human labor and passion and backbreaking work and maybe lives themselves were lost in the process of construction. And see, I can, I think the guy, you know, the humorless guys that talk to their wrists will probably not like me saying this. Hi, Agent Fred. But I look at the United States Capitol. I look at the Supreme Court. I look at the White House. You know, the White House is underwater. The Capitol is not. The Washington Monument could have water 70 feet up. And I think, what will humanity be doing then? But now we've been reduced beyond what will humanity be doing then to asking, will there be humanity then? And I am an anthropocentrist. I am an anthropophile. And I don't like to think about the end of humanity. And I'd like to figure out a way to talk to my children and my grandchildren about climate change and about what happens when it starts getting weird. Because, see, we're talking here about, you know, 2 meters or something. Dig it. 2 feet, and I mentioned this earlier, 2 feet of sea level rise, and there ain't no more South Florida. And it's not going to take 500 years for that. And these poor fools that think that they're going to somehow engineer a seawall for that? Please. Well, have I just nerded myself right out of a conversation?
No, food for thought, though. I mean, I've often wondered, you know, what is this place going to be like? Is it, you know, is it the cockroaches inheriting the earth? Or will we actually get, you know, some sense before we're goners, basically? And I really wonder about that. You know, we've got entire well-funded, really well-funded groups working the other direction, you know? I mean, they see the last gasps of the planet as a fucking market opportunity. 'Cause money, you know? And they'll just... they'll chase that money right over the cliff and not even think twice.
Okay, you just mentioned something, Grant, that got me thinking. Has anybody seen climate change-based advertising yet? Because that's when we're going to know that somebody has figured out a way to make a buck off of it and we'll take it seriously.
I'd look for that in the insurance industry first.
Oh, I'm sure it's already in the policies. You know, disclaimers, exclusions, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I really wonder if we're going to be around. You know, maybe in small pockets here and there. But I don't know. It just depends on how far we collectively allow, you know, the few chowderheads among us to take us down, how far down that road we allow them to take us.
Well, see, that's like the question that I was asking Jeffrey, Grant. If the entire world, and we know how hard it is for the entire world to reach consensus on anything, but if the entire world reaches consensus, or wakes up and smells the seawater, for that matter, about climate change, and the only country out there denying it as the waters rise is the United States, what is the remedy of the rest of the world?
I don't know. Divestment?
I don't think it's going to be that subtle, Grant.
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. What can the rest of the world do when its life is at stake?
Well, without me having to say it overtly because I'm trying to avoid it.
Oh.
The military has been releasing, and I got this little bit of information at the climate rally the other day, and it just kind of went inside my head. Hang on a sec. I think Tracy's trying to join us. One of the members of the House who was speaking day before yesterday said that the Republicans have just introduced, okay, background, prologue, preview, whatever. The Republicans make a practice, they make a fetish out of just
spooging themselves about the military, right? I mean, the yellow ribbons everywhere and support our troops and all of that specious bullshit that they spout. And they don't want to ever cut the Pentagon budget or anything like that, right, Grant? Well, the Republicans have introduced a bill in the House of Representatives that forbids, and the veterans in this group and the veterans in the Horn Family Commune Congregation are going to, okay, it's a duct tape and tennis ball moment, gang. The veterans are going to have a connection.
I already know about it, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, you watched the thing, right?
Correct, all the way through again last night.
You wouldn't happen to know at what point in the thing that that line about the Freedom Riders comes in, would you?
No, I don't remember who brought it up.
But anyway, the point here is the Republicans have introduced a bill that forbids the United States military from in any way considering climate change within its strategic planning.
What the fuck?
I knew I'd get one what the... I'm not kidding.
Yeah, we need a hole in our head, don't we? Oh, my God. What a bunch of clueless fucking dickheads.
Grant, I don't think I've ever heard you quite so succinct.
You never heard a Grant rant?
No, I have never heard a Grant rant.
Oh, you missed out.
I've led a sheltered life, Sparky.
Yeah, Tracy's with us now.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi. No, I heard about what is about the fucking boneheads and all that, so I heard that. So they have introduced a bill that forbids anybody from doing anything that has anything remotely to do with climate change.
Yes. Has
it been signed?
Well, no, it's a bill. It has to be passed.
Oh, so it's a bill. It has to be passed. How many people have they had a vote?
I haven't had a chance to do the research and find out what the bill is, but this is a response of the Republican right wing teabag house to these reports that the Pentagon is beginning to generate almost daily on what a strategic national security threat climate change is. And the reason I brought it up is, you know, there are people in the Pentagon who are paid to think about really, really deep stuff. And I'm okay with that. You know, it's better that they're thinking about deep stuff than trying to figure out the way to attack Iraq again or something. And they're looking at climate change and what it means for the United States. And the reason I brought this up is because of the conversation I was having with Grant, insofar as this was my premise, if the rest of the world, and by the rest of the world I mean the rest of the world, comes together and realizes that a human catastrophe is unfolding in the form of climate change, and the United States is the only country that insists on continuing to pretend that it's not real and insists on continuing to burn baby burn and drill baby drill and frack baby frack and blast baby blast and all of that stuff, then what alternative does the rest of the world have but to take action against the United States of America?
That's all they have. And, you know, it's so funny because this morning I have one of my students, I have to do a single transport because he won't cooperate with other kids. So I have to pick up an aide, take the aide to pick the kid up and then bring the kid back to school. And on the way, he was a young guy. He's from Wisconsin. And he was this was after he left, but he was one of those. He went to Lawrence, where he got his bachelor's, where they had where the big ruckus started a few years back about, you know, not being able to use your student ID to vote. And that they actually had right wingers harassing people about voting. Well, anyway, we were talking about the climate change and stuff. And just look at what we had, some freak storms here yesterday. Nothing on the lines of what's happening on the East Coast or in, you know, in the Midwest and whatnot, but still flash floods, hail and all that out in the desert. And I brought up to him about how Jimmy Carter had, solar panels on the White House, and then when Reagan got into office, he tore them down. And I said, could you imagine what would have happened had we had 4 more years of Jimmy Carter? He warned us back when he was president about climate change, about dependence on fossil fuel and stuff like that. And he's like, could you imagine how we had a president like that and then another president and another president? And by now we would probably have solar grids, wind power, away from the dependence of fossil fuel.
Well, sure, Tracy. I mean, it didn't take the Germans since Jimmy Carter to get to the point where the other day they produced 74% of their electricity from wind and solar. I mean, that happened
74%.
Last week. That happened last week, 74%.
And they don't get anywhere near as much sun as I get in California.
No. They're on the same latitude as Alaska.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like, and he's like, well, what would have happened if the rest of the world hadn't? I said, no, trust and believe. Had the United States really dug in and started working about climate change and all this and solar power and wind power and water and hydropower and all that within the last 30 years or so, the rest of the world would have followed suit. But like you said, if we do not get on board with climate change, they're going to come after us.
God almighty, Tracy, the Saudis are putting up solar panels.
Okay, even China is putting up solar panels, for God's sake.
Oh, it's not even China. China's putting up solar panels and wind turbines as fast as they can possibly go because they recognize that they have a little tiny window after which their entire industrial infrastructure collapses.
Entirely.
Yeah. They cannot keep burning coal. They just can't. And that's why they're putting up a wind turbine. It's like a wind turbine per hour or some ridiculous thing.
But like you said, we can have all of this, but because if we do wind power and solar power and stuff like that, then all these people that's made millions from electricity, the electric companies, the coal companies, the Koch brothers, let's just say it, they're not going to be able to make that money. So when they start, like you said, when I was first tuning in, when we start seeing the insurance companies and other companies doing commercials to prepare for climate change, when Madison Avenue starts sending out commercials for solar power and, getting ready for climate change, then you'll know that is the way to make this. Why? Because money.
Yeah.
Because right now they can't figure out a way to make money from it right away.
Well, right now, I think the ones that are taking it seriously are not so much worried about making money from it, but by keeping themselves from being destroyed by it.
Right.
Oh, okay. And by the way, Sparky just found the story for anybody that wants to know. It's at npr.org/blogs/itsallpolitics. Here's the title. Just go to npr.org and search it. House Defense Bill, Military Dreamers Out, Climate Science Ban In. Oh, my God, I'm afraid to even hear. Oh, look, it's David McKinley from West By God, Virginia. Let's see what this idiot had to say. Everybody, just stand by. Won't take but a minute. If it plays. Na, 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 na. Here we go. Okay, here we go. It's working now. Hold up. Hey, Tracy, hold up for a minute. Hold up, okay?
Okay.
Now, climate change alarmists contend that man-made CO2 is the cause of climate change.
Oh, God.
Okay, hold up, please. We got to hear this stupidity.
Now, climate change alarmists contend that man-made CO2 is the cause of climate change. Most people may not realize that 96% of all of the CO2 emissions occur naturally.
Well, I think we got enough of that. That was West Virginia Republican David McKinley speaking from the House floor, declaring that climate change is a big fraud. And so, yes.
Is he one of the people?
He's a teabagger. Hey, you know what's funny? There's a whole bunch of organized labor in West Virginia that wants to support this guy in November.
Are you kidding me? Organized labor?
You betcha. Building trades. Yeah. Yeah. So here's how it shakes out. This goober is the one who sponsored the amendment to the defense bill in the House. It bans the Defense Department from participating in climate change research at all. And the quote what we heard, the quote that I played there, we didn't get it all, and it was a little bit low. David McKinley said, climate change alarmists contend that man-made CO2, there's no such thing as man-made CO2, I mean, that much, you know what I mean? Climate change alarmists contend that man-made CO2 is the cause of climate change. Most people may not realize that 96% of all the CO2 emissions occur naturally. Yeah.
I think people just passed out, Bob, and from
yes,
all that natural CO2.
And by the way, thanks, Sparky. This is more of that volunteer staff work. This goes back to May 22nd, the story. And on this past Friday, the 16th day of May, David McKinley's amendment to the defense bill passed.
Mother, dear Jesus.
Okay. Now, whatever comes out in the way of a defense bill, you know, the bill is now in the hands of the Senate. But whatever comes out of the Senate is bound not to have this in it. But still, this is one of those little signposts on the way to the apocalypse. You know, I had a note from our buddy Frank a couple of minutes ago. He said, I'm not trying to be nasty, but I spent 18 years living in Central and South Florida before returning, thankfully, to Minneapolis. If we lose Central and South Florida, what will be the great loss to society? I know. But,
ooh,
you know, this country...
Yeah. Maybe some of our launch pads for space exploration?
Well, no. He just sent me a picture, and it's a funny one, too. It's a hover round pulling a tiny, tiny trailer.
Retirees, right?
By the way, Grant, you got a big all right grant from Darlene. She approved of your grant rant.
Hey, there might be big money in water mobility scooters.
Oh,
yeah, but really, flotation devices with little propellers.
Yeah, call them float around.
Yeah, really.
Or bob around.
A little rascal float around. Yeah.
I try really hard not to get, you know, crazed, but it's just, okay, right now I'm sitting in my cab because I just don't feel like driving right now, and I'm looking at the sky, and it's gray and overcast, which is fine because it is, we have May gray, but just last week, it was 100 degrees last week in May. We don't have 100-degree temperatures in May in L.A.
Yes, you do.
And it, well, now we do.
Yeah.
And where was it? I was watching this morning all the floods and stuff.
Yeah, by the way, we don't have 90-degree Mays in Appalachia. But we do now.
Do now.
It's just like I said last year, we didn't ever have tomatoes growing on Thanksgiving. But we do now.
Well, see, that's just proof, Sparky, that climate change is good. Oh dear, I read the quote from David McKinley and poor Devin about had a baby. I just got a note from him. F, I didn't vote for this effing necrovore.
Oh, he's his congressman, huh?
Yeah. And darling
sad
of the building trades in West Virginia, because they think they can do business with him. Idiots.
Barf. Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
You get to the point where. Damn.
No tequila, like, okay, no swirly straws. I mean, I'm kind of in trouble here.
What?
No, I said no tequila, no swirly straws. You know, nothing. I mean, I've even chewed through the last tennis ball.
Wow. Well, again, we have Pat Sajak. What did he say again? He said that if the climate change people
are unpatriotic racists.
Racist. You're unpatriotic racist?
F me, I guess. Although I did see the best response I've seen to the whole Pat Sajak kerfuffle would have to be her name is Carol Baker on Facebook, and she said she'd been thinking about how to make climate change real for Pat Sajak. And what you do is you let him play a game of Wheel of Climate Change Fortune. And when you land on bankrupt, you die.
Later on, Pat claimed that he was just, quote unquote, kidding. And, it was just a bit of hyperbole because you know how them liberals like to portray climate skeptics. And so I was just making that voice. And I just, like, ugh.
No. His syndicator got hold of him and said, "Are you out of your freaking tiny little right-wing mind? You realize how rich we've made you?
Mm-hmm.
You're hurting the franchise, Pat. We may have to let you go live on a farm somewhere." And, you know, that's never good news when they talk about having you go live on a farm. Tell them about the rabbits, Pat.
I sent a tweet to him. No, he didn't read it, but I just did it just for myself's sake. Pat Sajak on Twitter. I'd like a W, please, Pat. You know, for Wingnut.
Oh, well done.
Awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce, indeed.
That's just, wow. It's just, you know, and then you have the idiot Mark Cuban saying that if a black man was walking down the street with a hoodie, he crossed the street.
Yeah, he started walking that one back too, Tracy. I mean, God.
Hey. Yeah. I'm just, you know, why is it? And then he thought about the Trayvon Martin thing, and he had to, like you said, he had to apologize profusely. Because that was the whole thing. He was a black guy in a hoodie. That's why he was able to shoot him. Oh, these right rich people. What I love, it's so funny, because I got, yesterday, I was reading, every so often I remember the, I'm somewhere where I could get the LA Weekly. And so there's an article about Tom Cruise and how after 2005, everything changed. Because before that, there was no YouTube. There was none of this. There was none of this. There was none of this. And after 2005, you know, people's careers, you know, people had to be careful. You know, PR people actually had to talk to their clients about, okay, you do realize that everybody has a cell phone camera, right? And if you fuck up, all they have to do is upload to YouTube and you're done. Or they could record you and send it to TMZ and all that. So it was just talking about, you know, the whole thing of how his career kind of fell apart when he got rid of his PR, his regular PR agent, and hired his sister, who was all into, you know, Scientology and stuff. And that's how the whole Oprah thing started, with him jumping on the couch and all that.
Oh, God.
And it's like, dude, you guys, you can't just say whatever the fuck you want to say anymore. And not, like I told my girl, I said, look, because she's one of those privileged people, too. And I tell her that every day. I said, you do realize, because she's quick to say, well, I can say what I want to say is freedom of speech. I said, yes, sweetheart, you can say whatever you want to say. And yes, it's freedom of speech, but you don't have freedom from the consequences of your speech.
Yeah. And since when were you the federal government? I mean, I don't want to get in the middle of anything, but the First Amendment applies.
Well, you're not in the middle of anything, because
the First Amendment applies to government censorship, government limitations on speech.
Exactly.
Hey, Bob.
I mean, I have to go over that with her too.
Yes, Barky.
Did you read that article about Ted Cruz saying that the Senate was going to repeal free speech, the First Amendment?
Oh, God, yeah, I saw that.
What?
Yeah, he's crazier in the head and the hog is in the ass. But then again, this is a guy who was anointed to be king of America by his crazy fundamentalist preacher daddy. I think he'll just sing
whatever and waits for something to stick. I think that's what it is. I mean, just one thing after the next with this guy.
You know, every time I think about that anointing scene and Raphael talking about his son was going to be king of America.
We have a monarchy now?
Well, I mean,
when did that happen?
Well, because Jesus.
But, okay. I can't even come back with anything. I'm like, okay.
You're speechless.
Every time I think about that, though, everybody goes silent for a second. Oh, hang on. Okay, just stand by. No, I can't do that. Okay, everybody just goes silent for a minute, because every time I think about Raphael anointing his son Ted to be king of America, this comes to mind.
Not to become hysterical, but I'm not sure that I'm laughing or crying.
the best part. That's the best part of it right there. It was a fine idea at the time, but now it's a brilliant mistake. You know, Ted Cruz, King of America.
That's so frightening.
Yeah.
What am I reading? Oh, still haven't heard. By the way, I still haven't heard from Miss Grimes.
Oh, no, nor will you.
Well, nor will I. But and it's one of those things. Like you said yesterday, they figured that just because she's a Democrat, they're like, well, we're going to get Mitch McConnell out of office and replace him with who? With her, Miss I Love Coal.
Yeah, but
if you love coal, then
I mean, there's a net benefit to having her in there. I mean, she's also crazy mad in love with guns too, because you can't get elected in Kentucky any other way. It's a cultural problem, not a political one. But I was curious about Ted Cruz saying America would repeal the First Amendment, because anytime one of those idiots says something like that, you know they're pouting. And lo and behold, I've got the audio here. Thanks for bringing that up, Sparky. Let's check out Ted Cruz.
Yeah, listen to the forks drop.
I'm sorry?
I say listen to the forks drop when he says it.
Oh.
He said something at dinner.
Yeah, this was a Family Research Council thing. You remember Family Research Council is headed by Tony
Norman? Yes, Mother Bates.
Perkins. Okay, let's roll this for just a second.
When you think it can't get any worse, it does. This year, I'm sorry to tell you, the United States Senate is going to be voting on a constitutional amendment to repeal the First Amendment. I am telling you, I am not...
You weren't kidding. There's forks dropping in the background. All right.
Making this up, Senator Chuck Schumer has announced the Senate Democrats are scheduling a vote on a constitutional amendment to give Congress the plenary power, the unlimited authority to regulate political speech. Because elected officials have decided they don't like it when the citizenry has the temerity to criticize what they've done. They don't like it when pastors in their community stand up and speak the truth. And it makes their lives inconvenient when they're not standing for principle, and actually that's pointed out back home. And I'll note this amendment, which has 41 Democratic senators as co-sponsors. 41 Democrats have signed on to repealing the First Amendment.
See, he is the prince of lies, isn't he? Because if we went and we looked up the bill, it wouldn't have anything to do with what he's saying. But let's finish.
It explicitly says, nothing in this new amendment shall abridge the freedom of the press. So the New York Times is protected. But it doesn't say the same thing about the freedom of speech. It doesn't say the same thing about religious liberty. What it says is that politicians in Washington have unlimited constitutional authority to muzzle each and every one of you if you're saying things that government finds inconvenient.
Oh, what a liar.
Because you're all billionaires.
Jesus.
Alex Jones is playing that all afternoon.
Oh, who said that?
John did.
Oh, I was, yeah, okay, John.
Another Canadian representative.
I wanted to know who took one for the team with Alex Jones.
Oh, I like listening to it. Can't learn enough about nascent iodine.
Oh, you must be a glutton for punishment.
Well, honestly, I'll flip back and forth between him and Beck, and I knew Beck wouldn't be on because it's a long weekend.
I tell you what, I couldn't do 3 hours of either one of them without an IV of, you know, bottled in Bond straight into the inside of my elbow.
Well, it's funny now that, you know, I've understood how much of a huckster both of them are. You know, it's like amuses me. I remember back, you know, 2001, I thought Alex Jones was like, holy cow, this guy's got his shit together. He knows what's going on. Yeah, I know he doesn't. He's just selling water filters.
Yeah, he's the media equivalent of selling Grit magazine.
Man, he was up on the cross today because Beck is going after him.
Oh, they're after each other. Well, did you, John? Did you see where the wing nuts have decided to turn on the Beckerhead? Because he made fun of their Operation American Spring.
Yeah. And there's some sore asses over Bundy too.
Oh yeah.
Because he jumped out of that really fast.
Yeah. Oh, they're still butthurt over Bundy.
But yeah, Beck is calling himself Martin Luther King, and he's calling Alex Jones Malcolm X.
No, stop it, really.
Oh, and it's a contest in my head when I turn Beck on. Does he say Hitler first, or does he say Martin Luther King first?
Whoa.
Rex in the Skype chat says they're eating their own. Quick, chum the water.
Yeah, I see Haley here. Or no, it wasn't Haley. No, Psychoticus. No, Grant grabs the popcorn.
Well, like I said one time before, you know, guys like Beck used to really bug me until I watched this documentary about Morton Downey Jr. And you can see it in all of them. You know, you can see that game in all of them. And it just doesn't bother me anymore. It's a shame some people believe it, but I can't fix that, man. Well, maybe one at a time.
Well, when they turned on Beck, it wasn't far down thread, and Brad Friedman turned me onto this with a story over at his website. It wasn't far down thread into them declaring Beck to be an enemy of the state and a corporatist and to sell out, you know, sell out, shill, communist, fascist, right, all of those things. Wasn't far down thread before somebody noted, you know what, Michael Savage was right about him. He's just a clown.
Well, have they? I mean, didn't Brad talk about yesterday how not only is the Catholic Church and even the evangelicals are now talking about climate change, about, you know, preserving creation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been.
Are they not Christians now anymore?
Well, there's been a contingent of evangelicals who frame what they're doing creation care. And I mean, they're coming at it from within their own doctrine and theology, and you know, I can at least respect that.
Yeah,
but they are pariahs to they're pariahs to the rest of the sick dominionists. God gave us this planet for us to frack and blast and drill and yeah, what have you.
You know what freaked me out the other day, Bob?
What's that?
I was talking to my mom, and you know she's an evangelical, and she said dominion. And I almost had a heart attack.
I mean, as in, you mean somebody's talking some dominionism to her, or she brought over that, brought
no,
up that line
she,
from
well,
Genesis about dominion over the earth?
Yes, and because she was talking about her husband, how he never wants to leave, and about they have a bunch of animals because they have like a quasi farm, right? And she's like, doesn't he realize that God gave us dominion over the animals and this and that? And I said, I couldn't say anything. I actually, I normally I just, you know, lean into people when they say shit like that. But she didn't say anything about the planet or anything, so I left it alone. But as soon as she said Dominion, I almost passed out.
Well, it's right there. Like, I mean, I heard, God gave man dominion over the earth.
But he also told us to take care of it. That we were to be stewards, because this does not belong to us. It's called stewardship. And we haven't been very good stewards, have we? Blowing mountain tops off and fracking the fuck out of shit. Can you frack the fuck out of shit?
Just
realize what I said.
You can certainly frack the life out of it.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, you heard about this law in North Carolina, right? That makes it a felony for anybody to disclose what is in fracking fluid?
There's a law against it. You can't tell people what the fracking air, because is this going in along the lines of the frackingaires who are just so happy to have money they don't realize what they're doing to their land and to their environment?
Well, no. See, you've got more and more problems arising almost daily, Tracy, from these frackers because they say that their fluids that they use to put pressure on these shale formations to cause them to collapse internally, they say that it is a proprietary business secret, and that, well, you know, if there's ever a real emergency, and of course the fracking company will declare what is real and not real, then they'll maybe tell emergency responders, but they'll make the emergency responders sign a non-disclosure agreement about what's in the frack fluid. Because, see, if American citizens knew what was being pumped into their groundwater, those tumbrils might come out. I mean, folks might get a little uppity. One woman, and we had the story a couple of weeks ago, she was an ER nurse. And a guy was brought in who had been covered in the stuff, and the frack fluid was so vaporously noxious, they had to evacuate the entire ER. And she breathed this stuff, and has now a host of maladies, and is no longer able to work and barely able to function as a human. And of course, we had
the
story.
Did the guy survive?
Don't know. And of course, we had the story about the truck that got caught out in Texas driving 8 miles down the road, just dumping out frack fluid on the road as they went. Because there's so much of this stuff, and they don't know what to do with it, and they have no way to get rid of it. They have no idea how to get rid of it, because, among other things, it's radioactive.
They know how to get rid of it.
Yeah, take it out in the middle of the night and dump it on the road in Kearns County, Texas.
I don't claim that Congress critter, so just...
Well, it really doesn't matter. He's yours. I mean, I personally think you should cite that. Because, you know, West Virginia gets real uppity about the military. That needs to go into an op-ed in the Dumb Onion Post up in Morgantown or something. Or the Clarksburg Telegraph Exponent. Or the Clarksburg Telegraph Exponent and Battle Cry of Freedom, or the Wheeling Moral Volcano, or whatever, you know, whatever up there.
Well, I got one for you. The Barber Democrat.
Oh, I'll bet that's a real loot. Yeah, Democrat. Ha, 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 yeah.
Hey, if Tracy's out there listening, I had to remove her from the Skype group because their noise was overpowering you, Bob.
Yeah, I gathered as much. I think she was driving her traffic noise or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, it's about 14 minutes before the hour, and let me just note that our buddy Henry, who jumped out there and did something extraordinary, taking care of most of the fundraising for this evening, has been left to pretty much stand by himself. We had a little bit of help prior to the program, for which we are very grateful, all of us. But there's $60 to go, and that's just pretty much where it's been all evening long. So anybody that wants to take care of this, help to six folks at 10, 10 folks at 6, 2 at 30, 4 at 15, 3 at 20, anybody that wants to help close that gap is more than welcome, and the help is always appreciated. And we're so close to actually finishing the week to the good, even, not to the good, not ahead of anything, but we're only $60 behind now, and that's awesome. So just saying. Oh, speaking of religious lunacy, one last one just to close out the evening. You remember the Supreme Court case coming out of Greece, New York, where the rats on the Supreme Court declared that it was okay to have sectarian prayer before your city council meeting a couple of weeks ago?
Sure do.
Well, the rats are out of the tunnel now. In the wake of that decision, county officials over just south of me in the Old Dominion have declared that only followers of, well, they've said that they're not going to tolerate any followers of pre-Christian deities delivering prayers in front of their county commission meetings. Chesterfield County Board of Supervisors of Virginia, the ACLU, has noted that they have declared that only Christian denominations of their approval can pray to open a Board of Supervisors meeting. The Wiccans have been turned down because they were deemed not to be monotheist, but then they turned down the Sikhs, who most definitely are monotheist.
That's blatantly favoring a religion. Now, how can they legally do that?
Wait till it gets to the Supreme Court. They'll cite the Greece, New York case, and it'll be groovy. But I love this idea that no pre-Christian deities will be invoked at their meetings. Yahweh, Jehovah, El, Ihweh, Almighty Allah, he's a pre-Christian deity, isn't he?
God, Holy Spirit.
Yeah, he's
a pre-Christian deities as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you get right down to it, Christianity is a real Jesus come lately in the religion field. You know, the worship of Allah precedes even the founding of Islam. I mean, it's flabbergasting, and it's so obviously violative of the First Amendment. It is so obviously and flagrantly a matter of government establishing religion. I mean, this county had a list of approved gospel sharps who would be allowed to pray the meetings into session. They turned down a Wiccan, saying that it was a neo-pagan faith and that it didn't fall within the Judeo-Christian tradition, and because it invokes polytheistic pre-Christian deities. So now they'll spend a couple of million dollars of Chesterfield County taxpayer dollars in an effort to defend the Almighty Creator, all-powerful, almighty, all-knowing, all-seeing, of the universe, because he's too much of a
They wouldn't let Mitt Romney pray in there either.
He's just too weak. The almighty, all-seeing, all-powerful creator of the universe is too weak to stand up for himself. Beautiful, isn't it?
Do they have Mormons in Virginia?
What?
Do they have Mormons in Virginia?
Well, sure.
There are Mormons everywhere.
But the Mormons would never be so rude as to ask to pray the thing open. Because they do all their praying in their temples, which I at least have to respect.
Oh, okay.
You know,
I don't know about that, Bob.
Well, no, there's ceremonies in their temple where they wear their secret underwear and stuff.
I've seen them pray in public, though.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was magic.
As to what they were wearing under, I don't know, but.
Nor did you look.
Exactly.
All I know is
there's Mormons 3 miles from here.
All I know is when I see guys on bicycles with white shirts and ties, I run.
Hey, good news. Thanks to.
If they drive on my property, I'll bring out the guns.
Because freedom. Do you yell, yeah. When you do that, do you yell?
Yeah, I got a story.
Do you yell Wolverines, Duncan?
No, I'm just kidding.
I think it would put the fear of Maroney in them if you did. Wolverines! I'll try that
next time the Bible Thumpers come around.
That's good. By the way, a little bit of good news rolling in. Thanks to Jack and Thomas, Henry has some company now, and we are down to only $35 to go to finish on schedule for the week and on schedule for the month of May. So thank you very, very much. You said
is that our friend Jack in Louisiana?
That's Jack in Shreveport.
Oh, good. I hope he's around tonight.
I do, too. I think he's been having some compu troubles.
Oh, okay.
Hey, where was Tim tonight?
With Tim, you never know because, you know, his handle's the Invisible Asian.
Well, yes. He is inscrutable. He has to be. Part of the job description. Devin, you said you had a story?
Yeah. The old lady who used to live across the road here, a couple of those guys showed up one day in their white shirts and everything and, you know, asking around, you know, is there anything we can help you with? Well, she put them to work. I could tell you by the end of the day, the shirts wasn't white anymore and, they regretted ever asking that question of, is there anything we can help you with?
Yeah, from then on, the opening pitch was something entirely different. May we have a moment of your time?
Yeah. Of course, there was another, there's another story. Another batch of them went to stopped by a firehouse and, the firemen made quite an impression on these newly adult men tramping around the country trying to sell the word. Well, these firemen introduced them to something called porn, and they never went back to the religion.
At that point, were they pornmans?
Well, I don't know. One of them went out here and knocked up some girl and got married, and the other one just never came back.
Oh, don't worry about him. That's just Dad.
Yeah.
All right. It's time to get out of here.
There's two of them that's been saved.
It's time for us to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Great conversation this evening.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for everybody that showed up.
Yeah, sure really.
Help me out.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, Friday on the front porch is a good time, and it's a freewheeling conversation. Thanks for introducing me to the concept of the Grant Rant. I'll have to be around for one of those sometime.
Well, he has to get into the mood.
I understand. But, I mean, if that was just a taste of it, I mean, I want one. I'll put it on my
Christmas. Usually set out by the exploits of the Congress.
Well, you had one, didn't you?
Yeah.
Thank you, Grant. Thanks to Todd and Devin, Waggy, even though you couldn't get your mic unmuted. Haley, thank you. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Sergi. Thanks, John. Thanks, Jeffrey. And thank you especially, Sparky, for your long service in moderating the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, which also includes Lottie and Texas Betsy in the chat room and our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Hey, it's probably already the 24th over there, up over, down under. Big record coming out. I can't wait to be hearing about it. Good luck, John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. Ben, get to feeling better quick. I'm sure Ben will be back up to full speed in no time soon. WhiteRoseSociety.org and Ben Birch have been a clearinghouse and literally the preservation of progressive internet radio on the internet since 2002. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. This is how we're going to end mountaintop removal. It's the only law that has the possibility of doing that. ACHECT.org. We will close out the week only $35 in the hole, which is not terrible. So thank you one and all for all that you've done to make things better and get us over this hump. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn. Have a great weekend, y'all.